Hi, this is Jazz Rhythm, a weekly exploration of the lore, culture, and personalities of early jazz. I'm Dave Radlauer. Welcome to the second of three programs saluting an American musical genius, James P. Johnson. And my special guest, Mark Borowski, has some amazing Johnson rarities to share. I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Jazz Rhythm, Jumping Swing, Classic Blues, and Hot Jazz, Old and New. And I'm here with Mark Borowski, who has spent a lifetime studying and listening to the music of James P. Johnson, and is now a member of the James P. Johnson Foundation, which is an archive and trying to properly preserve and see that Johnson's materials, his manuscripts, letters, unusual recordings, and so forth, are preserved for future generations.
Thanks so much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
In this first of two programs, you've got a specific idea in mind for this hour.
Yes, we're going to be breaking Johnson's recordings down by decades. And in this program, we're going to be discussing his recordings from the 1930s, when I feel, and many critics feel, Johnson was playing at the height of his technical powers. Some of his most swinging recordings came from session in January of 1930, the four sides that he did for Brunswick. And the decade concluded with his absolutely wonderful sides that he did for John Hammond for Columbia, as well as his recordings for the Spirituals to Swing Concert.
So I think we're starting with January 1930, which is clearly the very beginning of the decade of the 30s.
Right. It's quite amazing that this session ever took place at all. The stock market had crashed 4 months previous to this, and the country was about to enter the Great Depression, from which it would not emerge until essentially the end of the decade or the beginning of the Second World War. That meant that recording activity, which Johnson had not done a lot of, at least as a soloist, was going to be seriously cut back. So Johnson managed to get his greatest solo session in just under the wire.
And so this is, what is this thing called, Love?
Tuned by Cole Porter.
Great tune, one of my favorites.
And Johnson gives it an amazing performance. Thank you.
just heard What Is This Thing Called Love? And this is Jazz Rhythm. I'm Dave Radlauer. My guest is Mark Borowski.
Pleasure to be here, Dave.
Johnson is the master of stride, which involves the left hand with a driving rhythm.
Yes, I'm using swing here in a more generic sense. Johnson's style does swing, as opposed to just being syncopated or ragged. It's not really known where this tune came from, but there is a chance that since it had been recorded previously by a group called the Great Day in New Orleans Singers, that it came from a Johnson show called A Great Day in New Orleans, which ran briefly in Philadelphia in the late 1920s. We're going to be hearing what may well be Johnson's greatest recorded solo performance. It is felt that You've Got to Be Modernistic may be the most swinging jazz piano solo ever recorded.
Well, that's a bold statement.
I think this will be borne out by a listening.
James P. Johnson demonstrating his superb technical skills and primacy among Harlem stride pianists in 1930. I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Jazz Rhythm. If you stay with my guest, Mark Borowski, and me, you'll be hearing rare and remarkable Johnson recordings in solo, band, and concert performances from the 1930s. Incidentally, the website of the James P. Johnson Foundation is, and this is run together as one word, jamespjohnson.org. The Jazz Rhythm website, where I always welcome your comments, questions, or requests for playlists, is jazzhot.bigstep.com. Here's Johnson in 1931 backing vocalist Rosa Henderson.
they're chic. To me they look like dressed up freaks, waiting for someone to buy them a meal. I really can't see them, 'cause here's how I feel. I ain't no flapper, just a darn good gal. Don't want no chic, just a real good pal. Don't want no man who stand around and look cute. I want a real man, not a substitute. No cake eaters or sweet men for mine. Can't be bothered, haven't got time. A chic keeps his hair slick and neat, and all the brains he has are in his feet. I want a good man, I mean a real man, can't be bothered with no chic.
Can't Be Bothered With No Chic from 1931. She was a red hot mama.
She certainly was. And again, Johnson tended to bring out the best in the blues singers and any singer that he accompanied. And I think they also tended to bring out the best in him. So, for instance, when he recorded with Bessie Smith and Ethel Waters and Rosa Henderson, he was at the top of his game as an accompanist.
And we will be hearing Johnson with both Bessie and Ethel Waters. Now, this is a real rarity you've got for us here. This is not widely available.
This was issued on a British LP, of which only 99 copies were issued, mm-hmm. and of which I am the fortunate owner of one.
The good friend. Oh, yes, the good press agent. Rodney here. Say something wrong, will you, boy?
Gotta do it.
You gotta do it.
Gotta do it.
Oh, brother.
And here am I, among the finest and greatest artists of my race. Proud to be here and love it.
You are?
Love it.
Love it?
Love it.
Love that. That's it. What?
The story here is that in Fats Waller's estate after he died was found a home recorder. At the event of a birthday party in 1937, he passed it around to various people in attendance. And the people who were at his party were U.B. Blake and Billy the Lion Smith and James P. Johnson.
And now, Jimmy Johnson! Jimmy, what have you got to say for yourself?
Well, hello, Big Filthy. What do you got to say?
Latch on.
Latch on. All right.
The Daisy Chain.
Right on.
So yeah, this was the who's who of Harlem piano in the 1930s.
And we're talking about like a disc recorder, not a tape recorder.
Correct. Yeah, it was probably acetate based or something like that, or glass based. The discs were in several pieces when they were found, and they were reconstructed, and this is what survives.
Very pleasant evening this afternoon with these gentlemen.
Are you sure they're gentlemen? Yeah, you really ready? Lion! Here's the lion up here. Roar, son.
Ha-ching. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure this afternoon. The happiest moment of my life is to be with three of the greatest pianists in the world. I think so. Thomas Fats Waller, U.B. Blake, and James P. Johnson. Outstanding. In Jewish, we say,
It was issued under the title of The Gathering / Liza.
The Gathering refers to the gathering of these notables at Fats Waller's house, to whom he hands around the microphone. And Liza is clearly, on the basis of the oral evidence, James P. Johnson. And he plays one chorus after another with wonderful inventiveness and many of the signature tricks that have become associated with Johnson over the years.
Which Liza is this? Because I know there are more than one.
This is the Gershwin Liza.
The Gershwin Liza.
And it was used as a signature piece by Johnson in later years.
Because he recorded it many times.
Yes, he did. Approximately 4 or 5 times.
Be blown tonight.
Is James P. gonna be having you blown on it?
He's gonna blow that box all out of here.
Well, all
are
right.
You ready, James?
What's it gonna be, man?
He found a new baby. Hey, I got the nurse. Ready?
Thank you. finding a new girl. My fashion plate, baby, has got me a whirl. Her kind of love is all mercy, maybe a slave. Sweet little dove is all I crave. Sweetest miss with a kiss full of bliss, can't resist somehow. Tells me lines on them eyes, oh, it's a wow. Baby, a hat ball. My new baby, send me, baby, that's all, yeah.
We've heard I Found a New Baby from 1938, Fats Waller with James P. Johnson, a Saturday Night Swing Club broadcast.
Yes, their last recorded performance together was from a broadcast of the Saturday Night Swing Club, where both Johnson and Waller were guests, and Fats' mentor as the pianist on I Found a New Baby.
And that's something we haven't mentioned up until now, that Johnson was Fats Waller's mentor, teacher,
yes.
Exemplar in many ways.
Fats owes his early styling and technique to having mastered the James P. Johnson piano rolls and then having received private lessons from Johnson himself. And again, the oral evidence bears this out. There is a direct descendancy from Johnson to Waller. And in Fats's very last solo recording session for RCA Victor, he honored James P. by recording his Carolina Shout.
And before that, an extremely rare recording of an occasion at the Queens home of Fats Waller in 1937, James P. Johnson playing Liza, and we heard some of the banter between the deans of the piano professors.
The next selection is Stop It Joe, which is a Johnson composition from the teens. He had recorded it originally as a piano roll, would later record it for the Library of Congress, and this is his first commercial recording of the tune.
We've got a vocalist here?
The vocalist is Rosetta Crawford, and the group is Rosetta Crawford and her Hepcats. And again, Johnson is returning to the commercial studios after an absence of approximately 5 years during the Great Depression.
And yet he'd worked with many of these musicians.
Yes, he had. He recorded with Teddy Bunn, the guitarist in the 1930s, and he had recorded with Tommy Ladnier.
Outstanding New Orleans-born trumpeter.
For the Upanassier Sessions.
I'm not that familiar with Rosetta Crawford.
She recorded under her own name, I believe, one session in the 1920s. And other than that, I don't know anything more about her either.
The Frankie Newton Orchestra, James P. Johnson performing Who. This was a group that he hooked up with on a couple of different occasions. And Mesro was in this session as well, I think.
Yes, he was. This group was put together by Upanassier, the French critic, who came to the United States in 1938 in an attempt to revive the traditional jazz recording market, which, again, had been slowly pushed aside by the popularization of the big bands in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a sense, Panassier was trying to get back to the roots of jazz.
As were many people at that time.
Yes, and it is significant that he chose Johnson to be the pianist in all of these sessions.
I don't mind being in your company. Please don't try to swing it, Joe, with me. Stop it, Joe. Won't you stop it? Stop it now. Won't you stop it? I don't mind dancing until the band gets through. You got to stop that wiggling too. I mean, stop that wiggling with me. Oh, stop it, Joe. On the level, take it slow. You little devil, listen, Joe, you got to take your time. I know what's working on your mind. Stop it, Joe. What's this all about? Ain't nothing doing. What you thinking about? Don't mind dancing till the band gets through. You got to stop that wiggling too with me. Take it easy, Joe. Working on your mind. Oh, stop it, Joe. What's this all about? Ain't nothing doing. What you thinking about? I don't mind dancing till the band gets through. You gotta stop that wiggling too with me. Take it easy, Joe.
Thank you.
a tune called Who, by a band nominally under the direction of trumpeter Frankie Newton, with such stellar veterans as guitarist Al Casey, Pete Brown playing some really nice alto sax there, Mesmero clarinet, and of course James P. Johnson piano. I'm Dave Radlauer. This is the award-winning jazz rhythm, jumping swing, classic blues, and hot jazz, old and new. Promotional support provided by the Mississippi Rag, a monthly publication offering traditional jazz and ragtime, interviews, history, photos, reviews, and current events. Details online at mississippirag.com. Still ahead this hour, more Johnson band and solo tunes from the 1930s. And when my guest Mark Borowski of the James P. Johnson Foundation returns next time, we'll be featuring Johnson in the 40s and the 1920s, and that'll include Bessie Smith and Ethel Waters. This is Don Ewell playing the tune Sunday in the Johnson Manor. Johnson had a huge impact on subsequent piano players.
Yes. In addition to Fats Waller, his most famous pupil, any of that generation of pianists were either directly or indirectly influenced by Johnson. And the names include people of his generation like Donald Lambert, Stephen the Beatle Henderson, Lucky Roberts. There came a second generation of younger pianists, such as Dick Wellstood, Dick Hyman, and Don Ewell, who were also greatly influenced by James P., would hear him play in the context of his groups, for instance, in Greenwich Village and around New York.
There are many outstanding proponents of the Johnson style, but in terms of the recordings, it seems to me that Ewell stands out.
He was an exceptional person in addition to being an excellent musician. He played chess through the mail with Dick Wellstood, for instance. I heard him play only once, but he came across as a very intelligent individual. He had liner notes to one of his albums written by Professor S.I. Hayakawa of San Francisco State. So he traveled in these exalted circles. And again, the listening really bears this out. The selection that we're about to hear by Don Ewell was recorded privately at Ewell's home in 1957. And is a wonderful example of the stride style applied to a popular song.